Welcome back, everyone. September the 1st, or September the 2nd, I guess it is. And our clean call for this, the beginning of the academic year from our perspective. So welcome.
Yes.
And we usually ask for announcements. And if there are any announcements, please jump in if you would. We're all just getting reoriented, aren't we?
Yes. Well, I can tell you we have the AGU has, right now everything is open to the conveners to schedule sessions. So we'll have 7 oral sessions, 5 poster sessions, and a union session. And conveners are scheduling them now, and early next week we'll actually have the time set. I'll be going to a meeting at AGU next week to actually schedule everything as a time slot. So that's where we are with the AGU meeting. Are there any other announcements?
Doesn't sound like we have anything else right now.
We're all quiet.
Yeah, is anyone else getting an annoying hiss when someone's talking?
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I hear it as well, Scott.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
I'm not sure either. Well, let's see if it it dies down a bit, if we can just deal with it. So as Scott mentioned, we're starting our new academic year. We have a talk scheduled this next week. Bonnie Murray is going to talk about the Ask NASA Nice. The question is, are there other topics? We do have things scheduled through September and October. We are looking to schedule things further out into the academic year. So are there topics that people would be interested in hearing about?
Anybody who has any interesting... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. No, please.
Anyone who has any interesting new information on psychological issues in global change education... I would be very interested to hear something that doesn't just sort of bemoan the fact that people aren't getting the message, but suggest some active ways to address that problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. A few years ago, we had Janet Kim on from the American mm-hmm. Psychological Association. I'm sure that we could... either ask her, or we can put a question out to the listserv asking if there are particular people that can address such a topic.
Yeah, I know my interest would be, you know, I've read a lot of things that explain why the disparity exists in opinion, but what I would be looking for would be somebody who has any data at all about what works to address that problem. Do you know what I mean? You know, we all know that there are political issues and there are social issues and there are echo chamber issues and there's just sort of hopelessness and stuff like that. But, you know, how can those of us engaged in trying to educate the public really take those into account and do something specific to try and address that difficulty with the kind of work we're trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
So there's two pieces that you might want to explore. I'll see if I can find the exact paper. But John Krosnick, a long time ago, came up with something called the ACE model. And it was based on data from his national surveys. But one of the things he found is that in order for people to accept the problem, a series of things had to happen, but the final one was the most interesting that I think is we've talked about in end little ways, but never really in an empirical way, which is the commensurate response. So if you have a really big problem, your solution space has to be commensurate to the size of the problem or effective to address the problem. If it's not, it sets up a lot of the issues that I think are addressed in this question. So he showed that early on, and then the Alliance for Climate Education, which has a very strong solutions component to its presentation, has recent data from some evaluation work that they've done with, I think, Stanford, that looks at this space as well. So, you know, when you just have the problem side of the equation in your educational programming, it sets up a lot of the issues for kids. So I don't know if those are helpful leads for the work you're doing.
So Frank, are you saying that when you say the solution space has to be commensurate with the size of the problem, are you talking about how it's discussed and described, or are you talking about something else?
Well, if you believe that you can solve the problem, you feel hope, you feel that humanity is going to rise to the challenge in commensurate ways, then your ability to address and learn about the problem is improved. But if you feel that it is beyond hope and beyond, you know, it definitely has a learning impact. I think that's kind of where I'm trying to go. I don't know if I've answered your question.
So basically, if you feel the problem is too big, then you have a hard time sort of worrying about it.
Right. It definitely puts a negative impact on your learning process. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also interesting that adults, I think this impact is greater than students. But those are not monolithic
mm-hmm.
groups.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a pedagogical approach to things, because pedagogically, if the information presented is overwhelming and the brain can't process it well, then it just tends to shut it down mm-hmm. and not engage further in that topic. So it's part of a teaching strategy where you'd want to break the information into chunks, but in this case, you want to break it into parts that allow the student to see their place in solving the problem.
I think too, it'd be interesting. I think what you were saying, I'd love to hear more. I know we had, I think we had the guy on the CSET project out in San Diego on last year.
Sure.
I don't know if there's any updates from, yeah, exactly. Updates from those CSET projects about things they're finding. I know that we would love, I mean, that, we're just starting a big lit review on that very question right now, just because that's what our new project is, a public education mm-hmm. project throughout the state. And so looking at how we can engage people in their communities and actually elicit some sort of behavior change is, we're looking for examples in ways to engage the community, so the public, but then also how do we actually get something beyond just, oh, I came, I heard, and I left. So not only how do we make it happen and how do you measure it as well. So I would be interested actually in an evaluation focus, someone to talk about how people are evaluating this stuff as well.
Okay.
Jason Cervenek, I would agree. The evaluation piece would be important because we have some different levels of sophistication we're using with evaluation, but I'd like to hear, I guess, more about what other people are using and what's been effective, especially given maybe the scope of funding there are for different initiatives, new ways of using technology to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, is there, and back to K-12 too, is anyone with their teacher, has anyone come upon the best pre- and post-climate literacy assessment for doing professional development with teachers or students, with teachers?
So in our Earth Labs project, we actually are developing a climate change inventory of questions. And they're, well, the interesting thing is that they're focused on students' understanding of change over time and space, because those are very relevant elements to addressing climate change issues. So we have a climate change inventory that's been growing out of that project. And there's also another one that's been developed by Sherilyn Morrow. So we could potentially talk about those too.
That'd be great.
We should We should also include the Bruce Moravcek and Peg Steffen and Hillary Davis from the Climate Stewards. Bruce Moravcek, Peg Steffen, and Hillary Davis from the Climate Stewards. Because I know that they've done extensive work in that area as well.
Okay. Yeah, they have an assessment they've been using for the Stewards now for a couple of years.
Exactly.
I've seen that one. Yeah, I've seen that one. That's a good one, too.
Okay. Any other ideas of things to hear more about?
Tamara, I'm wondering, this is John, I'm wondering whether we might want to put kind of a panel together, or what's your feeling about doing a panel on this kind of a topic so we could have some cross-chat about it, or is that just...
That's actually
I know we tried
idea.
That before and it gets complicated.
Well, it's just a matter of getting a number of people to commit at the same time, but we could potentially put together an evaluation panel.
Yeah, maybe the easier way is to have one person who does sort of sets up the stuff and then encourage a discussion afterwards. Maybe a little easier for us to do. But this seems really important to look at.
Yeah, well, we could, I mean, the other thing that could happen is we could have a session in which we have a more of an overview and then set up a panel later or set up a few telecons.
That would be good.
The, the CSEP office did a big survey. It might be interesting for them to present on what they found in that.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, Gail Scowcroft is going to speak, I think it's in 3 weeks, so we can ask Gail then.
What's in 3 weeks?
She's speaking. I think Gail's speaking from the CSEP office.
Great.
Yeah, I think it's either 2 weeks or 3 weeks from now. So we'll make sure that we ask her about that, or in fact, I'll maybe prompt her with that to say that's a question
that's come up.
Yeah.
There's two related ones that I would find interesting. Whether or not where they sit in the queue is another matter. One is we've talked about like an ecosystem of learning related to climate change education in its broadest interpretation, and I think that socializing and exploring that as a community would be a valuable thing, because we've not really had a very commonly agreed upon way of describing how informal, place-based, K-12, universities, lifelong learning, adult learning, all these things, how they relate to a topic like climate change. And the valuable contributions that they bring to addressing the issue. We've never really gotten that in a way that the rest of us get to talk about in a clear way.
Mm-hmm.
That would be one.
So are you talking about how they leverage and interact with each other?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's like the learning pathways beyond just K-12. How does learning for, if you're talking about a sixth grader, how does informal support the goals that we share versus K-12 versus family versus, and all that stuff? Because I think we're the right
so
kind
Frank,
of community to look at that.
Do you have somebody who's kind of looked at that space? Because it seems to me that there's lots of different people that address these different areas. But do you have somebody in mind that maybe we could, that sort of thinks about this as, the entire space?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, part of it is we've had conversations in this call and written papers about the collective impact model and, how to scale these activities, but this is in line with that kind of conversation. Those are more operational, but this is more theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Okay.
And there's another piece another topic, which Scott and I have started talking about with Ted Willard a little bit, of the, what percentage if we said, you know, the next generation science standards of the NRC framework supports environmental education or climate change education, and we had to say percentage, what percentage would you say? If you're making a compelling argument, you should probably have a justified way of determining that number. We know it's a lot more than it's ever been, but we've never actually codified or came up with an answer, because it would be strong for every one of us to have that answer. But I think, Scott, you've laid out a pretty compelling version of how we would move that forward in an efficient way, leveraging all the work that we did and the ocean literacy community did. But to condense that down into a single, you know, 35%, 40%, you know, what
right.
is it? So anyway, I think it would be maybe something that, Scott, if you and I worked that forward, it would be a round of engaging the network.
Yeah, we can talk about it when we get a draft
done. Yeah, that's what I usually do. Yep. That would be a great discussion.
This is Bonnie.
Well, it summarizes a lot of work we've done.
Yes. Bonnie,
yeah.
Bonnie.
I'd like to see us continue the discussion of further ways to engage teachers in the NCA. We talked a bit about this 2 weeks ago, and I don't want to see us lose that thread, because I think that was a very interesting point to move forward to.
Yeah, okay. I would agree with that. I was just thinking that it would be interesting to hear how different people are using that resource now that it's out there.
Yeah, and it would also be interesting to find out how... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. Okay, well, I was just going to say, Frank and I had some discussions about trying to find ways of helping teachers address the next generation science standards. And one of the things that Frank pointed out was making it relevant to their own particular curriculum or their own particular region. And that's one way that the National Climate Assessment can be used, is to help take the more general ideas and identify how it's relevant in particular regions through the National Climate Assessment.
Yeah, the NCA does that, doesn't it? It has regional...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But it provides a framework for which you can then provide some educational resources that can help students learn the concepts much more concretely by making it relevant by using the National Climate Assessment.
Right. It'd be also interesting to know how the launch of the NCA either has affected or has not affected other people doing similar work on the web.
Absolutely.
You
but
know, because
I can tell you there's a... The quick point is that those pages that we put a lot of community effort into, yesterday got 35 page views. But
you
know, yesterday got 35 page views. Labor Day, right? So if we go back a week before that, August 24th got 47 page views. So just I point that out to say that the biggest piece of the problem that we have is a marketing piece. We have
How about the 27?
The 27?
I did a workshop that day on it.
94.
So you Thank you, Minnesota. 94. Thank you, Minnesota.
Over the top.
But still, you take my point.
Yep.
Absolutely. You know, we have to do more than just put it out there. We actually have to make sure people see it. One of the things we've been talking about doing in the Northwest is doing some kind of, online workshop or something like that would just engage teachers here, particularly through the resources that have been identified for the Northwest, with respect to the National Climate Assessment. My sense is that it's probably going to be the best way to do it. It's almost a one-on-one kind of thing, the kind of thing that Kristen has been doing in Minnesota, and actually I know has engaged people from other parts of the country too. I think that's really going to be the way it's going to happen. That's how teachers connect in with things, is usually when somebody else recommends it to them.
Right. I do agree with that. And when they know that it's specifically professional development that's geared to them, you know, when someone's offering them professional development. So I know I said this 2 weeks ago when we talked about this, but on November 20th, we'll be doing a live interactive session over the web. It'll be a Google Hangout, and we'll have Fred Lipschultz from USGCRP as a speaker, and we'll be highlighting the Southeast region on that day, but it might be nice to do a build-up to that and make plans for other regions to be highlighted in the future.
Yes, yes.
So say again what is happening on, you said November 20th?
Correct. Third Thursday in November, because it'll be the Ask Nice session for November. And being that my job is actually to work through the Digital Learning Network, that's what we can do additional sessions of that through NASA's Digital Learning Network for other regions.
Good.
Great.
But I guess
so,
just bringing back to that.
How would we sort of think about leveraging that opportunity? Would we just suggest to others that they advertise it, or others can run similar webinars? Or?
Yep.
So how are you thinking?
Right. Well, I guess as an initial to start with that session, and as an initial moving marketing point, I could send out information about how to connect to that session and what will be covered, you know, like a blurb, a description blurb. But then it would be good if we could identify people that would like to do something similar for other regions.
Right.
I see.
Or maybe even in other languages, you know, to engage English language learners. So we could set up a schedule of live activities that we could do, and they don't have to be live. I prefer to do it that way so you get the interactivity, but they could also be static webinars. But we could set up a schedule to build this out and cover the other regions.
That would be great.
And the one on the 20th is for a particular region?
The one on the 20th is for Southeast, yes.
Yeah.
I see. And we could run this all through the NASA network?
Yes, that's correct. That's what's already planned. Yes.
I see.
That is, did you have a question, Frank?
Yeah, Bonnie, about how many people usually show up for these events?
So there's two things that happen with these. You can connect live into the session, and in that environment we have anywhere from sometimes 12 to 50 or 75 people. That varies greatly. It just depends on what sites we connect to. So this is an opportunity to connect a lot of people to this session.
Okay.
And then we can have 10 locations connected into the Google Hangout. So they see the presenter, they hear the presenter, and the presenter sees them. So Fred will see them and be able to engage them, and we're working with Fred. He has questions he's going to be asking to actually engage the audience. So it's an opportunity for up to 10 sites to be connected, but each one of those 10 sites can have anywhere from a few teachers to a rather large audience, and that's why it varies so much from month to month. But then in addition, anyone can connect and watch the session. And they can either tweet in questions to us, or there's a little comment box on the YouTube viewer through which they can send questions in to us. Those people we cannot see, but they can still interact with us. And then a third thing that happens is that a recording is posted as soon as we disconnect. And we had over 1,000 people watch the recordings last year. So there's lots of different ways to interact.
Yeah, so that's very interesting, because I tried a Google Hangout on a different topic altogether with the folks at the Knowles Science Teaching Foundation, and we had enormous problems with internet access by individual teachers from their homes. You know, there was a great range of connection speeds and reliability, and people kept popping in and dropping out, not because they were coming and going intentionally, but because their signal got interrupted. Have you had better experience with that?
Well, the 10 sites that are connecting with us that will be in the Google Hangout, I will take time in the week or maybe 2 weeks prior to the Hangout to connect with them and test their internet connection. That's my job, so that's what I do. You know, and I will make sure, and we will work out all the technical issues before they actually connect that day. So those 10 sites will have already done technical testing before we get to the day of that Google Hangout.
So, Bonnie, if we were to try to do one in another region, we'd need to identify 10 locations that would partner to do this?
We don't have to have 10. I mean, ideally, yes. But we, if we had, let's say, 5, and they had a good audience at those 5 locations, we could go with that, too. What we need to identify is someone that wants to host it for their region. That's the thing we would need to identify.
So we need to identify somebody to host it for the region, but then these various groups would be in that region. So if there were 5 or 10 or however many there are, you'd want them, like, so they're all going to be from the southeast. The 10 locations are going to be in the southeast this next time. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. No, not necessarily.
Oh.
Yeah, it might not be. That's not a requirement, let me put it that way.
Right. You could just advertise it nationally to be, but that the focus would be regional.
Exactly. In fact, we can advertise it worldwide. It doesn't only have to be the United States even. Because it is global climate change after all, right? So that's why I said we could employ other languages. Yeah.
Yes. But I think one of the advantages of the regional piece is that you can target the departments of education or the major school districts that have marketing systems already worked out for communicating with their teachers in a way that is much more strategic than broadcast wise.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very
correct. And it allows you to identify an audience that can best use the resources as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you are correct, Frank. Ideally, that would be the way to go. Yes. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say that if someone outside of that region wanted to be connected, that they couldn't be. But there are very good reasons to use that to have a local audience engaged, yes. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could ask people who created some of the other learning pathways if they wanted to highlight the resources
actually,
that they collected to teachers in their area.
Probably a very good way to start because they're already connected. I can send an email out to those groups and see if there's some interest there.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah, and this is Scott. I've been doing the same kind of thing here in the Northwest. I already have a number of people that we've talked about doing this kind of workshop. So this would be a great way to sort of connect in with an existing platform and approach.
Bonnie, isn't there a way to make a page in, it's either a Google Plus or something like that, where it kind of weaves together YouTube and Google Plus Hangouts, and there's a with like different sections that are related to this, so that if there was just a way of connecting all of these disparate pieces together.
Yep, what we do for each one of the sessions is create an event page.
Mm-hmm.
And the event page allows everyone, when the teachers go to the event page, all the information about the actual Hangout and the resources are there for them, and it remains there afterwards as well. So it allows them one place to go to find them. Yep, you're correct, yes.
Yeah, and then pages. Okay, I just didn't know the jargon.
Yeah, microsite is another term that's used. Yep.
Right, so we could move forward and do, you know, Ask Nice happens every month. So if we wanted to highlight the other regions in consecutive months, that might be a nice thread to continue with, you know, that some people would know that their region will be highlighted at some point in the future.
That's good.
That would be great, and I would definitely agree with the word of mouth as being the best, if not the only way, to get information out about these things, because I'm afraid teachers are getting so many emails about so many different things now that they just trash most of them, or their school servers just chuck them into spam folders.
But that said, that there has to be a way of, I don't know, this is an interesting research question, is if the teacher's inbox is a place to communicate with them, what are the strategies for getting past what you just said? Or are there other completely different modalities for engaging teachers? If you wanted to engage a teacher on something that was, you know, valuable for them, how would you do that?
Well, actually, I can send an email out to the Council of State Science Supervisors and they have access. They're each from a different state, so you know the regional focus is obvious here. So I could sort of send it. If it was a blurb that I could send out as an opportunity, that's another avenue we can get it out that would actually catch teachers' attentions, probably.
Yeah, that's exactly, I guess, that's who I send mine to. Yep.
But the subject line. Yeah, the trusted source, but the subject line, you know, how do you create a subject that actually gets the teacher to respond to it? That's a testable, you know, and then what's the first paragraph have to say in order for them to actually go to the second paragraph? Because time is not their friend.
I just got an email from the American Evaluation Association on effective email subject lines.
I love it.
I will forward it to you.
Please, but you know, I mean, the subject, the first word of the subject is incredibly important.
Yep.
And the second is even, you know, is better be good based on the first.
Yeah, and it's interesting because sometimes spam filters are picking up that first word. I remember sending an email to a longtime friend who said that my email was sent into her spam folder because the only thing I put in the subject line was visit. And apparently that was a trigger for her spam filter. It was really bizarre.
Oh, God. Not helpful. Thank you, Kristen.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, that's a very timely message,
very,
yes.
Well, it's a couple of days old, but I'm still digging out from vacation here.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, the words professional development and certification points available, we have found to be keywords with getting teachers engaged. Yeah, they need their professional development points to maintain their certification. So.
Mm-hmm. So
and we do send out.
Also?
Say it again.
I was going to say, does free help in the subject line?
Yeah, that's a really good one, too, yes.
Yes.
Well, I wish credits do help. Yeah. Clock hours, credits.
Yeah, exactly.
We we offered 2 grad credits this year for our institute, and we had 30 people register for graduate credit, which we usually have 5 or 6 for.
And how much does that cost?
Well, because it's called a co-sponsored course, so it's not advertised through the Hamline University catalog. I believe it's $300 for 2 credits. It's very inexpensive because it's not through it's not sponsored in any other sense. We do all the work except for just setting it up. So it was bumping it up to 2 credits was a really very marketable. Teachers really wanted that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Were you able to offer that without them having to pay for the 2 credits?
No, they have to. Some years we've had funding for something like that, but not this year.
Okay. Well, that's still wonderful, but yeah, that would be really cool if there was funding to, we can put the free in.
Well, actually, one of the things we found in one of our earlier projects is that a lot of times teachers have to put the money up front, but if they successfully complete the professional development, their schools or their school districts will reimburse them for the professional development.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, we found that to be true. We didn't anticipate. There was a project we had a few years ago that we had the opportunity to provide professional development and for some graduate credit, and the teachers worried. We just needed a letter from us at the end and the grade they got in the course, and they got paid back.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Just to back up to the subject line thing, I was looking at these tips. One of the things they said avoid is free gift in the subject line.
Because
it goes right to the spam filter. So free may also trigger.
It could work again.
Yeah, that's what I said. Don't put free in the first line, the first word. You could say professional development, comma, free.
Yes.
But.
Don't put free professional development.
could you forward that to the email list?
Sure.
That would be a great
Kristen,
article.
You want to send it to everybody? Just send it to everybody.
Sure. Yeah,
send it out.
That'd be great.
This is a great little newsletter. It's daily tips in evaluation, and it's my favorite little fun little thing. See where'd that go?
But, I mean, just one of the gifts and the bottom hot tip was test it, which I think is a really important one. Because, you know, find a target group and write it and make sure that what you think you're meaning is what they take away before you hit send to the networks.
Yeah.
So going back to that, building out the NCA to all the regions, Tamara, is there anything you need from me to send out to the other regions? Because I think I heard you say you would send something out.
Yeah, if you could send me a description of what it is you're planning to do and you know, what the benefits are so that I can sort of advertise it. If we can do something like this for your region, that would be really helpful.
Right, because if we could cover all of the other regions in consecutive sessions, I think that would be very powerful. Okay, I will get that to you, Tamara.
Yeah,
and you're recording them all, so that's really great too, because then you can have access to it.
Correct. Yes, they become YouTube recordings.
That's great. The other advantage is if we do all the regions, then we can weave them back into the pages, the archives, and the promotion.
Yep.
Good point. Yeah.
I mean, let's just keep on weaving all these different pieces until it's together, if we can, because it's you know, it's a community effort, so that's the whole, you know, got to have a home for all this stuff.
Yep.
For multiple homes. Let's put that with multiple homes.
Okay. Any other suggestions for talks or other ideas for communicating about climate change more effectively? Okay, well, we will follow up on all of these ideas, so thank you very much. And we will start our first presentation next week with Bonnie, so thank you very much, Bonnie, for being our first person this year.
You're welcome. Looking forward to it.
Talking again next week.
That's great.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Tamara.
All right.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
Great. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.